episode 194 of the TV Dudes podcast, recorded August 2nd, 2018.
Love Shack! Baby, Love Shack!
It keeps going, Grant.
It does.
We keep rolling on.
We're never going to... We need to stop at some point.
No, we're never going to give it up.
Oh, shit. That's so good. Randy, it's just you and me holding down the fort this week.
It's just you and me. Les and Kyle are both on assignment. Ashley's down working for NASA. It's just you and me.
We're keeping it OG.
That's right.
Week.
That's right. You know, I was thinking, I've listened to the Pod Save America and all those kind of guys, all their stuff, and... one of their guys is getting married, so they're doing an episode that was just like John Lovett and John Favreau. Felt a little loose. They get a little goofy when it's just the two of them.
Yeah.
So I feel like we should warn our listeners that that's entirely possible. The two of us, there's no one here to hold us back.
Do you think we're going to get goofy?
It's possible.
I don't know, man.
Maybe
I don't,
not.
Yeah. I think we're going to keep it straight and narrow.
Right?
Yeah.
NPR style?
Yeah.
Welcome to the TV Dudes.
Hey, guys. So this week, we have a great lineup for you. So did you enjoy watching these shows this week, Randy?
I very much enjoyed the shows. I think they have a lot to say about American culture today.
Oh, my God.
Can you imagine?
If that was... Where'd our listeners go? They're all gone. Ah, jeez. Hey, guys. Yeah, this week, we are talking about... Casual just returned over on Hulu for its fourth season.
And final.
Orange is the New Black is back for its sixth season,
yeah.
And this is the post-riot, the repercussions.
Yep.
And we're talking about episode 4 of Castle Rock.
Yes.
So we've got a good lineup this week. It's just you and me, so... Hopefully we can keep this brief and we can be out of here in about 10 minutes or so.
I'm sure, yeah. It's going to burn right through it. No side journeys this time out, Grant. Nothing to – focused. No running jokes.
No.
Just focused 100%.
No.
Yeah.
Focused. Speaking of which, we are proud members of the Electric Sweater Network.
Electric Sweater!
No
backup.
No backup.
Acapella.
I'm sorry. We are proud members of the Electric Sweater Network.
Electric Sweater!
I liked it.
Okay.
It was good. Thank you. It's good. I don't feel so alone.
ElectricSweater.com. It is a collective of about 7 or 8 podcasts that are all TV related. So go over there, check it out. Give all our brother and sister podcasts some love. You can also help us out by going to patreon.com/TVDudes and make a per episode pledge. We got a new pledgy.
Yeah?
Yeah. Some guy named Michael Moody.
Wait, isn't that our boss? And he decided he was our boss?
He's not our boss.
He said he was our boss.
He doesn't pay us.
Oh.
So what? That's not a boss.
So he's like an American boss.
It's an owner.
He's an owner. Oh, Jesus.
It's more fucked up than
you
thought.
Oh, yeah. It's like dark.
Yeah. Anyway, patreon.com/TV Dudes. We are grateful for all of the support that you guys give us. We do bonus exclusive content to try and say thank you for all of you patrons. And who knows what we're going to discuss this week?
Could be anything.
It could be literally anything.
Yep.
But it's likely not going to be literally anything.
No.
We're probably going to narrow it down to our geek circles.
We will focus it. Yeah. It will not be everything and anything. We have done those and they're not great.
No, it's generally a mistake. But yeah, thank you, Mike, for your patronage.
Yeah.
I think he just wanted to hear that episode where we talked about him and the banana. So he became a patron.
That's fair.
Yeah, if you guys don't know what we're talking about, patreon.com/TV.
Mike and the banana.
Let's jump over into the news, Randy.
All right. So
and trailers, because I think we have a bunch of news.
Yep.
We have a bunch of trailers to discuss.
So big news, of course, is that ALF is coming back.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. There's an ALF TV series reboot being developed by Warner Brothers. And you might be asking yourself, well, good God, why?
I am.
And the answer is because everything is getting rebooted.
Would they redesign ALF?
God, I hope so. Is it going to be CGI?
Oh, shit. It's going to be. Remember when they took Puppet Yoda and then they made the CGI one in Phantom Menace? And you're like, what is that? Like hyper green, weird fake monster thing.
So
They're all fake. That's
what
the
if
thing.
They just used the same puppet? What if they just and what if it's like the puppets that have been sitting in stores and they're all like ratty and it's like a zombie elf?
Oh, just like they don't even bother taking the dust balls off.
No, he's just like he's got patchy fur and like one of his snout is like drooping.
They leave him in the storage bag. Yes. It's a clear storage bag. He just talks through.
What if it's a continuation? Because as we know, Alf famously ended with Alf getting caught by Area 51.
Right, but they did that movie, right?
Did they? Oh, I don't know. I'm not an Alf truther.
Yeah, I don't want to claim to be either. I don't remember where it left off. I did see someone make a pretty funny tweet about how they need to make a dark, gritty version of Alf. That'll be a prequel, and it'll be called Melmac. on the streets of his home planet.
Yes. Yes, I like it.
Yeah.
The CW could do it.
Just... I don't see why we need Alf. I feel like American Dad even tried to do something that was a little bit Alf-esque. And they had an alien living with him in the house and whatever.
We don't need Alf, but we're getting Alf anyway.
Oh, boy.
Stephen Moffat, fresh off of Sherlock and Doctor Who, is going to be doing The Time Traveler's Wife at HBO.
I don't know much about this series, but I know... of Moffat's work and his pedigree.
He's going back into time travel stuff. This is a sci-fi romance novel about a woman whose husband suffers from a genetic condition called chrono impairment.
Oh, wait, they made a movie about this.
Did they?
Didn't they?
I don't know.
This guy like kept jumping in and out of time.
It was a movie starring Eric Bana and Rachel McAdams in 2009.
Yeah, I didn't recognize who that dude was, but he was very British.
So when Henry meets Claire for the first time, she's already met him many times throughout her life.
Okay.
It's about an intricate and magical love story that tells the story of Claire and Henry and a marriage with a problem, time travel.
Yeah, I don't know if that sounds like a fun or interesting TV show. It doesn't have to be fun, but it should be interesting, and it just sounds tedious.
The other thing is, before Moffat kind of ran Doctor Who into the ground, he was one of those guys who was like one of my go-to guys. Like he did Dr. Jekyll and Hyde that was just called Jekyll, I think, that was really good.
Right.
I liked his early Doctor Who stuff. I liked Coupling. So I'd like to think that maybe – and I like a lot of Sherlock. So I'm wondering if maybe this will be his return to greatness or a continued descent into crap.
Yeah.
Could go either way.
He's Shyamalan now. It's all downhill.
Hey, Shyamalan's about to have a big comeback with Glass.
Do you think so?
I do.
Okay, did you like Split?
I really liked Split.
Oh, man. Did we already talk about this?
No, we did not.
Man, I hated Split.
Oh.
Because I hate James McAvoy's performance there.
You're probably not going to like Glass.
Just terrible. And I watched that, and I'm going to get more of James McAvoy doing little baby voice. And I'm like, no, I don't want to hear him doing little baby voice. It's gross. It's gross. It's annoying. I don't need it in my life at all. And in fact, I get kind of upset.
I can tell.
Because I liked Unbreakable. Unbreakable was great.
Yeah. I feel like I feel like you're about to unleash the beast.
No. That was such a dumb ending. The whole the twist and it all.
So I'm going to say you're not going to enjoy Glass. I don't think that's very likely.
James McAvoy's character is going to kill that movie. If Shyamalan doesn't kill that movie himself with his mediocrity and his one note final act twist thing.
Anyway, I want to avoid any sides. Let's keep focused. Focus. Laser focus.
Oh yeah.
All right, there's a Maniac trailer. Has Emma Stone, Jonah Hill. It is by
Wait. No, before we get in the trailers. Let's talk about the last bit of news.
Okay. Yeah. So, Altered Carbon has been renewed for season 2 over at Netflix.
Uh-huh.
And it stars Anthony Mackie is going to be the new sleeve that our lead character wears.
So we were talking about this, and what's the lead dude's name in the first season? Holder dude? Holden?
Yes.
Holder?
Sure. That guy.
Yeah, no, the dude from The Killing.
Yeah, that guy.
And House of Cards. I don't know. Joel
Kinnaman.
Yeah. He was all right, but we were wondering if the other sleeve version of him, the Asian guy, had to try and do his best impersonation of Joel McKinnon.
Yeah.
Because Joel Kinnaman, rather.
Not Joel McHale.
Joel McHale.
Different show.
Because that guy was not going to be able to do an impersonation of him.
Yeah. Yeah.
He might be a little bit wooden.
Yeah.
I don't know. But Anthony Mackie's great.
I like Anthony Mackie. I'm curious to see what they do with him in the lead.
Yeah.
I've heard general buzz that the second novel is nowhere near as good as the first.
Oh.
But that may mean that the second season of the TV show, they can take a lot more liberties. They can do whatever they want.
I would hope so. I heard that the first one sucked.
Oh, really?
Someone read the first book and they said, no, or they were like, man, that movie was really, or the show was really great. So I went and read the book, and the book is so bad that I can't believe the show is that good.
Is it somebody who doesn't know how to read?
It was Charlie Day.
It didn't make any sense. It was a bunch of letters, and I couldn't. It didn't make any pictures when I flipped through.
Like, which way am I supposed to read this?
Yeah, what do I do?
Front to back, back to front. I don't
understand.
Know.
Yeah.
Yeah, that could have been a tip off.
Yeah. So trailer wise, Netflix had one for Maniac, which has Emma Stone, Jonah Hill, and is going to be directed, at least possibly written, directed by Cary Fukunaga from True Detective season one.
Yeah,
I don't know what the hell this is about. It's some kind of dark comedy about a drug trial to solve everything.
Okay, so maybe it's a little bit. What was that show where they were head cases or something? What was the one where they were? It was on FX.
Oh, I don't remember.
They were always taking medication. They were drug rats or whatever.
I don't remember this.
It was a comedy. And I don't either. Oh. So honestly, it was a bad thing to bring up. I apologize to the audience.
Okay, I'm thinking maybe Black Mirror-ish, maybe a little of that, a little of weird. You know,
I love the style of this little trailer.
Yeah.
I mean, it's very kind of 70s surreal and kind of kitschy. It reminds me of what's going on over on Legion.
I was
going to
say, there's definitely a Legion feel.
With the voiceover and, the just really bold graphic choices.
Also, Jonah Hill is completely different now.
Yeah.
I mean, I knew he was getting thinner, but he looks completely different.
He's half the man he used to be. Like, physically.
Yes, physically half the man he used to be.
Yeah, he's looking good.
There was also a trailer on Amazon Prime for Forever.
Yeah.
Which is...
Like this one and Maniac. Like, where'd these shows come from?
I don't know. Neither one was on my docket, so I just put them on the schedule.
Forever, it's got Fred Armisen,
mm-hmm.
and it's got...
Maya Rudolph. And they're like a married couple.
Yeah, and it... I love how the trailer was put together for this one and, mm-hmm. and for Maniac.
Yeah.
Both very intriguing. What I saw from the TCAs was this last week, and so there's a bunch of people talking about it. And that's why we got a bunch of trailers, but also there's a lot of positive buzz about this show, Forever, in particular.
Interesting.
And it's over on Amazon Prime. Who could use a win?
In September, yeah, they could definitely use a win. Yeah. Then there was the Star Trek Season 2, the Discovery Season 2 trailer.
Right.
Which I loved.
Yeah.
It's so good. Anson Mount's going to be a great Captain Pike. The status quo is interesting. It looks a little Abrams Trek in some ways, but not in bad ways.
Part of this, I mean, I don't know Trek.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
I'm not familiar with this world.
Right.
But my understanding is this is taking place 10 years, 9 years before the original series.
Yeah.
And it's starting to feel like, to me, now that characters are crossing paths and they're recasting some people, like, the fans are going to be going over this with a fine-tooth comb and really looking for slip-ups, and it's going to become a little bit denser and potentially messy.
Hmm.
Like, that aspect of it makes me... a little bit nervous, but I love what they did in that first season, and I'm pretty confident they'll handle
it. I feel like, and maybe I'm just too casual of a Star Trek fan, but I'm like, if you're watching this looking for the canon and where they screwed up, you're not watching it right.
Yes.
it's
to people.
It's so well done, and if you're like, well, Klingons don't look like that, well, fuck you. The show's not for you. You don't deserve the show.
Yeah, fuck off.
Yeah.
You can go fucking watch an M. Night Shyamalan movie.
Go watch The Orville by M. Night Shyamalan.
Yeah. Go watch that, you piece of shit.
Yeah, how dare you not like Star Trek?
You straw man.
Well, we really let that guy have it.
Yeah.
That imaginary person. Totally let into that guy. He probably likes the Romanoffs, which is the last trailer we have.
That was an interesting segue.
I've never seen the Romanoff trailer, so.
Okay, so the Romanoff trailer.
It's about Black Widow.
I think so.
Yeah.
I don't actually know what this is about, except for that it's Matt Weiner, the guy who was the creator and showrunner of Mad Men over on AMC.
Mm-hmm.
This is his new show over on Amazon Prime.
Yep.
And watching this trailer, it's just a series of Russian letters that are scrolling both directions across the screen, and then occasionally they'll translate into the names of different actors that are going to be in the show.
Okay.
And it turns out this is a completely star-studded ensemble cast. It's kind of nuts. And yeah, like I said, I don't actually know what's going on. Is this a period piece or not? Does Matt Weiner want to do another period piece?
Here's what Wikipedia tells me.
Okay.
It says it's a contemporary series set around the globe, centering on separate stories about people who believe themselves to be descendants of the Russian royal family.
Okay. So it's Sense8.
It's an anthology series. Yes, it's Sense8.
Yeah. Well, I think this is just another one to keep our eyes peeled on. And, you know, if a couple of these shows start taking off, Amazon Prime is going to be in quite a different position than I think we've lately been characterizing them.
Redhead stepchild.
Yeah. They're going to be the redheaded Romanoff at this point.
Yes. So again, Black Widow.
Folks, so we are going to talk about Casual, followed by Orange is the New Black, and then we're going to jump back over to Castle Rock, also on Hulu. But first up, Casual. Casual is on its fourth season and final season.
Yeah, it turns out it's its final season. I did not know that.
Over on Hulu, and I have not seen any of the first three seasons, but I know that, Randy, you really seem to love this show.
Yep.
I think you talk about it every season when it comes out. And is this unique this year that they dropped all the episodes for the season?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that usually this is a once-a-week episode. And then so I started watching it, and I was like, oh, it looks like they put up three episodes. And I kept watching, and then there was a fourth episode, and I was like, wait a minute. And found that they had put all eight up for one go.
So
I finished the series. Yeah, I finished the series. I really like this show. It is about a brother and sister, Alex and Valerie. Valerie has a daughter who originally was a teenager in high school. They've done some time jumping, so she is now in her 20s and sort of building her own life.
Engaged and whatnot.
Well, she's not engaged. She just has a girlfriend.
Oh, okay.
But basically, this was about sort of a dysfunctional family where Alex and Valerie were like best friends. She got a divorce because her husband cheated on her with a much younger woman. And Alex is like this guy who like runs a dating website and is kind of sleeping around and doesn't really know what to do with his life. He's kind of a bro. And then they have this friend that Valerie meets on a dating site who is – oh, man, what's his name? Leon, who becomes like – Alex basically adopts him as his best friend. And so he kind of got drawn into this whole thing. So, Grant, you came into this and you saw the status quo of like completely different because Casual starts with a time jump.
Right.
Like we left off with them like Leon and Leah had – Leah were getting married and Laura and Valerie had done a split and Laura was going to do her own thing. And this picks up like two – and Alex was having a kid with his this woman who was like lived in his house.
So here's what I'll say.
Yeah, yeah.
This is going to be a pretty unfair assessment of this show because I recognize I'm jumping in, only watching one episode from the fourth season premiere after it's doing, like you said, a time jump with these characters after quickly rushing through an introduction to them.
Yeah.
I was expecting a comedy. And I guess there's some comedic moments to this, but this is actually a very depressing midlife crisis show about some very lonely people.
Yeah.
And
Les won't watch it.
And
Les does not like it.
Yeah. I was like watching this, and it's also just this kind of posh and
they don't worry about money.
Out of touch type of.
West Coast liberal.
He owns his house in California.
I don't mean to say that with such disdain.
No, but it is. It just feels like this type of culture that I'm already like, get over yourself.
So the big pitch on this one originally was that it was co-created, or at least heavily directed by Jason Reitman, who did Up in the Air.
Right.
And a few other shows. And it feels totally of a piece with that kind of thing, where it's like, it's sort of a comedy, but it's mostly a self-indulgent wank fest about how hard it is to be a rich person in California.
Yeah, yeah.
And I should hate this show based on that, but I fell in love with all the characters. Like, none of them have real problems. Like, one of the plots in this season is that Valerie's tired of being a successful therapist, so she quits her job and opens a wine store, which of course goes fine. And I'm like, That's not a struggle. That's you decided to change careers and you don't have to worry about it because you're perfectly rich. Mm-hmm. Like at no point am I worried that these characters aren't going to work out. It's all existential worry. It's all like they can't be happy and they can't find love and that kind of thing. And despite the fact that they're both good looking people who can date dozens of people, they can't find love. It's all how screwed up they were by their parents and all that kind of stuff. And it is very self-indulgent.
Were they screwed up, or is it just them telling me they were screwed up by their parents?
No, their parents were heavily featured in seasons 2 and 3, and they're fucked up.
Okay.
Yeah, their parents are nightmares.
All right. Yeah, because it's like, you guys keep saying it, but...
Yeah. No, we saw... That's the one thing I'll say about...
You guys seem to have your shit together for the most part.
The thing I'll say about season 4 is that this is after 3 seasons of growth and them figuring out what they want. They're still kind of messed up, but they're not as messed up as they were, and they did show us like what their parents were like. So I think because I was invested in the characters, I really enjoyed what is essentially a victory lap of the season. Like, the problems are not real problems. It's kind of like Entourage problems. Like, oh, well, I might not have a successful wine store. Or oh, well, my girl that I got pregnant who I love is dating somebody else and maybe we're not all going to be happy together. Like, it's such non-problem problems.
Yeah, surface level, superficial issues, and like you said, existential crisis. I mean, you're invested with the characters,
yeah,
but
that's
I wasn't. And I don't know. It's got this melancholy tone reminded me of what 6 Feet Under did very successfully, but at least with 6 Feet Under, I felt a little bit more of the thematic drive.
Yeah.
Of intent there.
Yeah.
And this one seems to be kind of dipping its toes and also wanting to be like this kind of comedy, but a casual comedy.
I think for me, this was the culmination of a journey with all these characters.
Right.
Like, I don't think, even though it is, I mean, you probably weren't lost at any point. Like, it all made perfect sense because it did a big time jump.
Yeah.
But at the same point, there's no reason why you would jump in at season 4 and follow these characters through the last season. But as the last season, I liked it. I liked what they did with Laura, you know, sort of fucking up her life. And she is sort of screwed up by her mom the same way her mom was screwed up by her grandmom. So it's – I like seeing them make some mistakes and seeing them make different choices and that kind of thing. I find it really interesting. I have a fondness for Southern California, so sort of the sets and that kind of thing. I can sort of live vicariously through that. It's the same way that, like, Johnny Neal and Greg used to really love the Mad Men, like the notion of, like, that 50s, you know. Like, you may not – they're all pretty terrible people, but you can enjoy the aesthetic.
That's so funny. I get what you're saying.
Yeah.
Except for that I think one of the things I did not like about it was the aesthetic of Southern California.
Yeah.
Or, although it felt more like Napa to me
in
certain scenes, like especially like with the dinner scene with the daughter in that first episode. I'm like, where are they? And I don't want to be there.
That's my brand of pretension. If I was going to be bougie, that's where I'd be bougie.
Okay.
Yeah. So it plugs into what I like. And I thought they did a nice – and they jumped around in time quite a bit. Like, there's a few time jumps between the episodes where they sort of scoot forward or back a little bit. And I like when someone does that. It's a self-indulgent final season. Like, there's no way anyone should start here. But if you've been liking casual, I feel like this is a pretty solid finale. And I'm glad they wrapped up here. Like, they could have kept going, but I think probably this was a good place to end it.
This show came out right around the same time as Catastrophe.
Yeah.
The BBC show with Rob Delaney.
Catastrophe's better.
I love Catastrophe.
Riotously funny.
Yeah, it's dark, it's fucked up, and it's really funny. And the pathos
those characters.
Yeah, sure.
It's intense, and there's such realism there. And like, I always confused the two initially.
Yeah.
And I thought I went in to watch Casual one time, and it was catastrophe. I had to watch the wrong show.
See, I feel like Casual was the first Hulu success, the Hulu original that was successful.
Ah.
That was the other thing. It's like that there was the first one that was successful for me at any rate.
Right. This is the one that got you your yeah. foot in the door.
That made me think that, okay, Hulu can produce some original shows. So.
Hmm. Well, let's move on from that to talk about Orange is the New Black season. Are we sure it's six?
It is season six.
Season six. This is post the riot season. And if you guys have stuck around with us TV dudes long enough that you remember our review on that.
Yeah.
I came down pretty hard in pretty much a hatred of that season. Like by the second half of that season, I did not like it. I thought it was a big mess. And I don't fully recall why. I'd have to go back and listen to it.
I kind of liked season six, or season five, rather. I thought, for one thing, the death of Poussey was such a huge thing that I kind of liked the base of that drove the entirety of a season.
Yeah.
And in fact, is still driving it because this is all the answer to what happened in the riot season.
Well, I like what this one does because maybe it wasn't even that season I hated. Maybe it was the season before it. I don't even remember now with this show.
I've liked all the seasons of Orange is the New Black to some extent. But what I've discovered, especially in this season, and I think after Poussey's death, which Poussey was like my favorite character in the show.
Right.
The show's kind of lost its heart for me. Like it moves really well. It is written really well. It's directed really well. The cast is great. But I'm not invested in any of these characters. Like, I don't really care what happens to any of them anymore.
I found it was a little bit of a return to form. I was invested in this quest for justice because us, the viewer, saw what actually went down with the big dude, Piscatello.
Yeah.
How he ended up dying.
Yeah.
Spoiler, by the way. Sorry.
Yeah.
And the ensuing cover-up. So I thought that getting to see that from our perspective lent a lot to me rooting for particular characters to put together the pieces, figure out what's going on, and hopefully overcome a system that, you know, in reality is kind of destroying them. I did not finish this season yet. I got about over halfway through.
Yeah.
And I know that at one point they kind of returned to the idea of Piper's – the real-life Piper Kerman, her life reflected in Piper Chapman on the show where she's like, maybe I'll write a memoir.
Yeah.
And maybe I can help change the system. And I thought about this show and I thought, has this show done anything to actually change the system?
No. It's definitely made people more aware. I mean – I think everyone's becoming more aware of the prison, the notion of private prisons, especially with that, what they did the last couple of years, where they sort of showed what happened when Litchfield became like a private prison. Like, they're definitely trying to show people a more rounded view of people in jail.
I guess that's a good point. The fact that this show exists and is now in our, not lexicon, but our
consciousness.
Our consciousness, our pop culture recall.
Yeah.
When we think of having a discussion regarding the privatization of the prison complex and have this as a sort of touchstone reference point, I guess that is good for people being able to give some sort of frame to why this is a problem.
It's contributed to the discussion in that way, I think. But I do think one of the complaints you had maybe a few seasons back was that Piper feels like it does feel like some like a white lady telling a black story. Like it feels like we're seeing her privileged view of
it's always
of
been
prison.
Yeah, this and voyeuristic like that, exploitation in a way.
I like that increasingly Piper is sidelined, and I find that anytime Piper and Alex are on the screen, like even though I like both those actresses quite a bit, I don't care about their stories, and the less I see of them, the better.
I have a problem still with the voice of the writers being a lot of times more dominant than the voice of the characters.
Yeah.
And this show is more criminal in how it does that than a lot of shows. It's heavy-handed and inconsistent with characterization when they have a terrible, low IQ sort of prison guard suddenly waxing philosophical on feminism and the patriarchy. And it'll just be like for one scene, and it's like, oh no, the writer just wanted to say something and like crammed that dialogue into a character that makes no sense having say that.
Yeah, that's fair.
Any practical sense. Fair. And they do that all the time, left and right with these different characters. And I'm like, you guys are just using everyone willy-nilly, and it breaks character for me. It breaks plot.
Yeah.
And I don't appreciate it when they do that.
Yeah, I can see that. I think the thing for me is that, like I said, I'm not invested. Like, I don't care what happens to any of these characters for the most part. Certainly, I don't give a crap about any of the guards. I think they're all terrible people. And Cavuto, at this point, like, I understand why he does what he does, but basically he's done so much horrific shit that I can't get invested in whether or not he gets his job or whatever. Like, who cares? He's an asshole.
Yeah.
But the writing and the pacing is such that I'm always like hitting that next episode button. I always want to see where they're going. I always want to see where the stories are going to develop. And I think they do. Their writer's room is maybe one of the best writer's room for, like, they must have, like, here's a character, what's their arc? Because every character has an arc. They all weave in or in and out. Sometimes they're surprising, like them coming up with them doing their podcast or the prison radio, basically. Little fun bits of things. And
ridiculous.
But yeah. I want to bring up, and I don't know if this drove you crazy, when they're doing their prison, when they're recording for their podcast or whatever it is, they show the computer, they show the program, and it's not moving. They're not recording anything. And that is so lazy, because how hard is it to have it running in the background? It's so easy.
I didn't notice that.
It drove me crazy every time. And I'm like, just don't show it if you don't want to do it. But don't show it's frozen like they're not recording anything.
That's sad. It's like a Wet Hot American Summer, yes, where that one kid is revealed is not actually recording for anyone else.
Yes.
He's just insane. Piggybacking off of that, something that really annoyed me,
mm-hmm,
and maybe I'm nitpicky, mm-hmm, but there was this scene where Black Cindy and what's her name? The two podcasters, Flocka,
yeah.
They end up joking with each other while waiting in line.
Right.
And their dynamic is so funny that everyone else in line is laughing.
Uh-huh.
And the fact that we never see anyone else laugh or interact in those kind of real moments like that was so jarringly forced to me that I was just like,
I agree.
Fuck off. Well, they overplayed that scene to a point where I was like, you guys are just really trying to tell us that they're funny rather than showing that they're funny.
Well, I think that's a common thing with Jenji Cohen shows and with this show in particular, is that it is a show about heightened reality.
Yeah, they shortcuts sometimes. They're just a little...
They definitely, like, they play things pretty big. But I think the reason you're nitpick is, in general, I think both of us like this show, right?
Yeah.
Like, both of us quite enjoy the show. And it's such watchable TV.
It's bingeable.
Yeah.
Very bingeable.
So I'll definitely go back and watch the last three or four episodes I've got left to watch. I'll watch it next year, and I'll keep watching as long as it's on. It's never going to be my favorites anymore, but it's always enjoyable.
Right. All right. Well, let's jump over and talk about the fourth episode of Castle Rock.
Yeah.
Randy, I think we have a question, though, that maybe I should address.
You want to address the elephant in the room?
There's this elephant question.
Yes.
And I'm like, why are elephants asking us questions?
Yeah.
All right, let me jump over to this.
Right.
Dennis McElwain says, are you and the oneofus.net people going to fight over the quality of Castle Rock? Please don't, or a single tear will roll down my cheek. And to that, I think we say, who?
Yeah, who's what? One of us? I don't know what that is.
I don't know the fuck that is.
Yeah.
I'm guessing whatever this site is had a negative review about this show, and leave it to us. We're the TV dudes.
So here's what I'd say, Grant.
Swagger.
You know that.
Sorry.
You know I'm a big believer in freedom.
You are.
Freedom is my thing.
You made a whole brand of French fries based off of it.
I did. And here's the thing. People are free to be super, super wrong. People are free. Like, if you still love, like, Walking Dead is still your favorite show. Like, you are free to love The Walking Dead. I think you would better spend that time staring at a blank wall for an hour and thinking about all the terrible things in the world. You wind up, less depressed and more entertained. But you are free to watch that show.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. You are free to think that Westworld is just confusing nonsense and not, in fact, amazingly awesome.
Use your brain.
Yeah. You are free to be wrong. And I think that oneofus.net, which, reading between the lines, they are free to be wrong.
Yeah, yeah. Well, shots fired. Let's go ahead and talk about this episode, because in this episode, we watch our main dude. What's his name? Harvey or Harry or Henry?
Let me Henry, guess with Henry Deaver?
Henry Deaver.
I was going to wait till you. I'm going to keep her names.
Henry is starting to unravel some of the backstory of what happened during his disappearance.
Yeah.
He runs into Desjardins. This old man who lives
weird,
close to where he disappeared.
Yep.
And I thought I'm kind of interested in how his disappearance is coinciding with what's ever going on with the Satan that they have in jail.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. How did that guy pop up? Is there something that happened between them? And it didn't really explain to us why Henry had an interaction with this Vince Desjardins guy. Or like why he knows him. It stopped to cut the scene.
I felt like there was definitely some implications, because he's like, the guy's acting all weird and he says things like, I never touched you.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
we're always
right?
wondering like how he survived the frostbite. Well, clearly this is the house he was at.
So he was here.
But what does that mean?
Right.
Like there's
and what was that creepy little box or cage that he had in the backyard.
And the thing is, my mind goes to is like he had him caged up or something. Like there's definitely some weird shit went down.
He had him caged up, or he had that other boy caged up who might be around the same age.
Yeah.
The demon.
Yeah, there's some weirdness. And I'm the guy, the performance there was great. Like the sort of weird, quirky old man. Like I really liked all that. It was a very Stephen King moment.
How he assumes aspects of the conversation without Henry even saying things and like keeps like weaving it. And Henry's like, man, am I really this good at like getting someone to just open up?
Right, right.
No, you're not. This guy's just just saying whatever he wants to say.
Yeah.
I like the relationship that's developing between him and Melanie Lynskey's character.
Yeah.
Even though as far as we can tell, it's toxic for her.
Yeah.
It's a little bit destructive, but maybe it's also in a way good for her to have a relationship with this guy that's been her crush for who knows how long.
Sure, yeah.
She is the reason to assume that he, like, you know, aside from him being the everyman, the common voice or the view of the for the audience, right?
Yeah, point of view character.
Yeah. He also seems to be a good person because she vouches for him and she can read his mind.
Right.
That's my assumption. I don't know. I think he is.
I think so, too. I also like the relationship between him and his mom and Ellen Pangborn. I thought that was really interesting, and that Pangborn was covering for him or thinks he was covering for him, and that his mom is like kind of losing it a little bit.
Right. So according to Pangborn, if we take him at his word, Henry's dad pointed it out that he was the one who did this.
See, I take him at his word, but I still think his dad was like not.
It was possessed.
I don't think. Yeah, I don't think it means what he thinks it means. I don't think it means. It's not so clear and dry, cut and dried. Yeah.
All of this I thought was good, fascinating buildup, but it all kind of ran a little bit slow.
It was a bridge episode. It was definitely a bridge episode. Yeah.
Except for that ending.
Oh man, the ending is crazy.
So, okay, we have this scene where the prison guard guy, he interacts with the prisoner, the creepy Satan prisoner.
Yeah.
And they bump fists.
Yeah.
And from what I recall, last time, the other guy, he was like, you don't want to touch me.
Yeah.
To the
you think he's sort of like he
the neo-Nazi
spreads his devil touch?
Jail cell, yeah. If someone touches him, it's bad news for them.
Yeah.
So I think that's what happened. Like it ends up poisoning him.
Yeah. See, it's funny because I was watching it and we saw in the first or second episode, this guy watched saw all this murder on the monitors and none of it had happened.
Right.
And so I was like, is any of this even happening? Is he just imagining going through and shooting everyone? And then it becomes very clear that, oh, yeah, that's definitely happening.
Yeah, he was under the influence there.
But throughout the episode, he's, like, drawing happy faces on the monitors and clearly is sort of messed up. And that stuff was creepy and effective.
And it all takes place after he does the fist bump.
Yeah.
And that guy looks at him like, oh, yeah. Shit, I got you now.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah, because it starts to creep up and infect him. And I thought it was a pretty great scene by the actor after he goes on this killing spree that you watch through all these different camera angles on the different monitors. Which,
yeah, that was beautifully shot. That was
what
so
a fantastic
good.
Scene.
Yeah.
But when he finally comes up to Henry, you see him blink kind of awake
sort of
from
out of
this, this control.
It says, I want to testify.
Yeah. And it's like, oh, shit. He was under control and being driven to murder people, which, man.
Yeah,
that's a fascinating and powerful enemy, and very, very much in line with Stephen King.
Yeah. Well, the other thing is, Deaver wants to get out. He wants to be done with all this.
Right.
But they're clearly not going to just, like, he's not going to go leave Castle Rock, so something's going to draw him back in.
I thought that that scene was going to have the prison guard survive, and then he was going to have to try and cover for this guy who's definitely on death row, right? Yeah. Like, how do I defend this guy?
Pretty sure that didn't happen.
Yep, no. He did.
Yeah, he did.
But Stephen King tweeted out this week that he's like, hey, guys, I just want you to know, you don't have to, don't watch Castle Rock for all the Easter eggs. Watch it because it's fantastic at telling plot.
I saw that.
And I'm like, are you kind of saying that, man, they overdid it with the Easter eggs? I didn't know if in a way it was a little bit of like a under his breath diss about amount.
I felt like it was more of a like a nod to the fans who love to dissect this kind of thing. Like, don't get so lost in the trees you don't see the forest.
Right.
Yeah. And I think that's a good point. Like that, it's cool that there's all these Stephen King things, but even if you're not a Stephen King fan, Castle Rock works as kind of a spooky narrative.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's impressive. And it's got a great cast and it's beautifully shot. Like you say, I think this episode I was a little underwhelmed by. I thought this was a weaker episode of the series.
Just a little bit slower. Yeah.
But it's a bridge episode. There's a lot going on. They got to get to. And I did really enjoy a lot of it. So
I wish there was a little bit more Alison Tolman in this series.
I wish there was a bit more Alison Tolman in every series.
Yeah, we only got a glimpse of her in like one scene, it seems, so far.
I'll say that. I think that's kind of the thing with Alison Tolman's career. She was so good in Fargo, and she was basically one of the leads. And then she hasn't done anything else since that where she's had that level of role, I don't think.
No.
And
she was
know
in that dog movie. Where,
I don't know if that's her.
Or a dog show.
I don't know if that's like her agent or it's her, but she needs to find a show where she gets to show off a little bit more.
Word.
Yeah.
Fully agree. All right. Well, let's take a break real quick because we got a couple more questions we're going to hit.
Are they all about oneofus.net?
All of them. So get your fighting gloves on. Question time. So once a week, if you guys go to facebook.com/TVDudes and like our page, you will see a post go up by our man Randy Lander. And he says, you can ask us whatever you want.
Whatever you want. Preferably TV related, but whatever you want.
I think people are pretty good about keeping it to TV.
Yeah.
And we just got a couple more questions this week to cover. So let's rock through this, Randy. First up, a question from our buddy Jonathan Haptmichael, who says, hi, dudes. Since Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt has an Orange is the New Black cameo, fans now claim the two shows have to be in the same universe. Let's take this idea a bit further. What shows do you want to have as shared universes? You can make tangential connections like the same showrunner or vaguely similar subject matter. You can even smash together two completely different shows just for fun. The choice is yours.
So there's all kinds of stuff that I would smash together.
Okay.
So I'll keep going until we're done. But first of all, I think that I'm going to start with Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
And I feel like both The Mick.
I feel like we always say that
The
one.
Mick. And of course we do, because it's one of the most fun shows to mash up. The Mick and AP Bio.
Right, right.
Like, both of them should be Dee and Dennis adopting new identities and trying to start their lives over.
Well, I will piggyback off of that and say that I definitely think that Parks and Rec, The Office, and The Good Place should all be the same shared universe.
I agree. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Why not? Have one of those characters die and end up in the bad place, and it's April Ludgate.
but don't you think, like, Leslie should go to The Good Place?
Yeah. So she wouldn't be there. She would have to be in The Good Place.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah. I think there was that joke that Alias was basically – or Alias was going to be like what Felicity did when Felicity got out of college. She became a secret agent. Like, that was their pitch. So I think what you should do is reveal that Felicity's mom was a Russian spy in the 80s and on the Americans.
Yes. Okay. I think Leftovers and Lost should be in the same universe too.
See, I was thinking Lost and Person of Interest. Benjamin Linus gets off the island, and while he's working with Hurley, he is also running a massive supercomputer and a vigilante operation in New York.
Okay, I can see that. That's good. And then, of course, 6 Feet Under and Dexter. What happens after he loses the funeral home?
Here's the thing I always wanted. I feel like Buffy and X-Files should have been in the same universe. There's a season, I think maybe one or two episode, where there's like an invisible girl and she winds up in this like government school for invisible assassins. And we never followed up on it, but I'm like, that's a perfect X-Files case.
Right. So, and then, like, there's the case with Luke Wilson and the kid from The Sandlot where he's a vampire.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's a little crossover right
there.
It
does. It fits.
Yeah. Next question comes to us from Jonathan Huffnagel, who says, Orange is the New Black is so good, though I kind of miss the earlier seasons when it was far more goofy. I think my favorite plot line involved the possibility of a chicken that may or may not be real. In review of all seasons past, what are some of your all-time favorite Orange is the New Black moments?
So I was realizing a lot of Orange is the New Black kind of fades together for me. But also, I agree with Jonathan Huffnagel. I kind of wish the goofiness of it. I think they've gotten so serious now that when they do the goofy, like you and I were talking about, it feels unearned. Like, Tasty and Flocka have – or Cindy – is it Cindy and Flocka? Or is it Tasty and Flocka?
Cindy.
It's Cindy and Flocka. Having a podcast and having wacky hijinks
feels
kind of weird when they're in the midst of all these gang wars and still dealing with the grief of Poussey and the riot and all that. It's hard to sort of change those gears.
Yeah.
But I remember when the fence is down and they all run out and go swimming in the pool, like swimming in the lake outside. Like, that was a great moment.
That was fantastic.
And
when they kill the hitman. In shed, and they're trying to bury him under there. I love that whole sequence.
Also, I liked the part where Jason Biggs wasn't on the show anymore.
Yes.
That was a great moment.
Favorite moment of the show.
Favorite of the show, yeah.
Oh, that's a great call.
Yeah.
All right, let's do one more question.
Okay.
Before we wrap up things here, and it's from Alec Miracle. It says, dudes, there's too much love in the world. Tell us something you hate about the show, a show that you love, which is a flip of what you did last week.
Yeah, that's funny because there's definitely not too much. There's not too much love in the world. There's not enough love in the world.
Yeah,
there's a song about that.
This is a miserable world.
So I will say that both Westworld and Legion, which I love, I adore those shows. I understand the complaints about how complicated they are, and sometimes how they are sometimes pretentious and showing off.
They could do more to be more accessible to a wider audience, and which might do a better job of ensuring that you and I get more episodes.
Yeah, which is all I care about.
Yeah. I would say that my problem with The Good Place is that 13 episodes just does not seem to be enough of that show.
Oh, I disagree.
Give me a few more episodes. Bump it up to 16.
No.
I heard that in Kristen Bell's contract, she has it stipulated that her maximum that she will ever do for a season is 16. So I'm like, well, let's do it. Let's hit that max.
I feel like they should do 13 episodes on a Christmas special. Do that British model.
Ah. I love it. I don't know.
They're doing
everything right. I don't know why I would complain.
I love a limited number of episodes. I am all about the 13 episodes. More isn't always better. Yeah. So I don't know if I agree with my, on that one.
Okay. Fair enough.
I will say Always Sunny in Philadelphia, which we love.
Uh-huh.
Little yelly. There's definitely a bit of yelling is always funny that goes on, and sometimes it gets on my nerves.
I will say Game of Thrones, which I love.
Yeah.
Little rapey. They're a little bit rapey.
It is a little bit rapey, and it's hard to watch sometimes.
That part's uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Also, the deviations from the source material and George R. R. Martin, I feel, was a little bit mishandled in that they were so desperate to give a lot of victories where it felt like it was rushed. And also the travel between characters feels a little bit more coincidental and absurd.
Somebody in Westeros has a TARDIS. Maybe more than one person.
I'm like, is this a realm of magic? Oh, wait, Grant, it is.
It's a realm of magic, yes.
Give him a pass.
Clearly teleportation spells.
All right, guys, we're going to end things there. This was a fun episode. Randy, I don't feel like we actually deviated off topic too much.
No, there was one long rant about a movie. I've forgotten even what
Glass.
It was.
Glass. It was Glass, yes. Shyamalan's movie. It's going to be garbage. Don't anyone go see it. Quit supporting this guy. His movies aren't good anymore.
TV News out.
The TV Dudes is an independently run podcast and a member of the Electric Sweater Podcast Network. We are exclusively listener supported. If you'd like to help us out, go to patreon.com/TV Dudes. You can like us on Facebook and Twitter at TV Dudes. All the music for our show is by our friend and original TV Dude, Gregory J. Amani Smith. To find out more about us, go to thetvdudes.com and electricsweater.com. I'm Grant Davis. Thanks for listening.